Hi everyone, this is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, October 28th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and toward this end has two websites. The archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody here and ready to go?
Ready.
Hey, y'all.
I am indeed.
All righty. We'll jump straight into our opening riff, which comes from a Kuo session from November 8, 2008. Kuo says, "The waking consciousness is to the fuller consciousness of a self-realized entity as black and white is to color. The everyday life can be lived in grayscale, and there is always the temptation to remain on the surface and enjoy the grayscale, for it is comfortable. The life that is lived on the surface can be far more easily controlled than the life of one who wishes to plunge deep into the treasure troves of his own being and open the self up to the book of wisdom that is hidden within those stores that are so carefully tucked away below the waterline, below the waking consciousness."
Thanks, Austin. I remember years ago when Don and I were just meditating together. One time he told us, the rest of us, after the meditation session was over, that he had had an unusual experience. He had started seeing a different reality. The colors moved and rolled and had a life of their own as they catered. There was a beautiful, incredibly bright sunrise coming. And years later, Don asked the Ra group what that was, and they said, well, that was the initiation into the Golden Dawn. Well, Don said, you know, that was so exciting, it made the rest of viewing like black and white. And he loved that difference and wanted to know how to replicate that experience. And Ra's answer was that it was not necessary to do that twice, that the time had come and gone for that initiation. He had passed just fine. I think he was always keeping watch out for those beautiful colors. And I knew what he was talking about, because when I was 13 and my kidneys failed and I died very long, about 2 minutes, according to the doctors, my heart stopped that long. But I slipped into that same kind of incredibly colored universe, where everything pulsed with beauty and all the colors had a life of their own. They were so alive and wonderful. And even sound flashed in the air. It didn't just happen. It purred with an audible not a drum, but certainly a concussive sound. And I wanted so much to stay there and move across this beautiful green hill to a temple I could see. I could see just the top of the temple. It was a white temple. It looked like it was marble. How I wanted to stay. But I had to come back. I had to come back to this world and its challenges, its duties, its rites and rituals, its livingness, so that I could serve. That was the bargain. That was the deal. You can stay here for a while and be with your friends and enjoy the life of the temple. And then you'll just have to go back twice more instead of finishing this one earthly life. Well, naturally, it sounded better to me to do one life than to do two. So I opted to come back and work as I was led to. I was not aware of what I had that was a service, and if I were aware that it was anything, it was not what ended up being my service. It was singing. Oh, well. You know, you just live and learn. You truly, truly do. The thing about seeking beyond the surface is that it has two sides. It's exciting and it's terrifying. It's exciting because you don't know what's there. Don't know what's there. You don't know what wisdom has for you today. And unless you ask, you never will. It's an interesting question. Am I ready for a little surprise today? Well, you better be, pal. It just may happen. I don't necessarily think that black and white is boring. Look at what they've achieved in those film noirs. Like the Maltese Falcon. Humphrey Bogart was the acknowledged king of those. And then there was a romance of that genre with Bogart and let's see, who is his lady love? In that, Ilsa to his gin joint. I don't remember her name. At any rate, they were marvelous and showed just what can be done without color. But there's something missing if you don't ask. If you don't go within and say, what's new? It takes real gut. The newness of things can be a frightening thing. You don't know what to do about it. And dazzling though it is, it seems to be beyond your ability to comprehend. It happens. because you end up catching up with yourself. You end up being able to absorb it, take it in, and use it. But for a while there, it's touch and go. So, what do you say, guys? You want to play some ball? A little touch and go? I'm there if you are.
Amen, and thank you, Carla. We have a caller. I believe it is a familiar voice for our first question. Is this JP from Utah?
It is, guys. It is.
How are you doing, JP?
I'm doing wonderful. Happy fall. It's so beautiful here. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it just peaked here, too.
Yeah, it's amazing outside. So many colors.
Well, my question is, going through my main text, Raw, Law of One, Book One, Sections. Well, in the first book, he talks about it quite a few times, but he doesn't really, or I don't get all the ramifications. He mentions the Council of Saturn or on Saturn, and it was really, I'd just like to know as much information that's available. Are they equal to the Council of Ra and the Council of Elohim? Are they over them, under them, equal to them? I'm impressed and pleased that they have chosen this beautiful solar system to inhabit. If you could just shed a ton of light on everything that everybody knows about them, that's what I'm really interested in right now.
Well, I'll be glad to make a start. Like any other administrative confederation, the Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator has a local office, which is the Council of Saturn, which addresses questions in the solar system. And I don't know, maybe other solar systems neighboring. It consists of 9 members, according to those of Ra. And of them, there are either 12 or 24 guardians made up of the Confederation of Angels, of those who have been felt to be most helpful.
Hey, Tyler, can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, sure.
The audio feed from JP's phone is really interfering with things. Can Austin either mute his microphone, or JP, can you mute yourself?
I went ahead and muted JP's microphone. JP, we'll unmute you again once we're done discussing the question.
Okay.
Go.
Thanks. Sorry for the interruption. Go ahead, Carla.
Okay, no problem. Things that are in question come before the council to be decided. I don't know whether it's just a matter of terminology or what all of these other council of this and council of that. I know that this is the information that we have, and I would be a fool to try to figure out what other people's information has, or, you know, how it blends in or doesn't blend in. Guys, have a ball.
The Council of Saturn is one of my kind of favorite things from the Law of One, in the sense that it's just one of those really kind of out there ideas. Just the Council of Saturn itself seems like such a strange sci-fi-esque idea, but it's really cool. I like discussing the Council of Saturn, but it's a little difficult to grasp. They're supposedly in the rings of Saturn because there's a certain sort of magnetic resonance in the rings of Saturn that are very conducive to what they do. And supposedly the council, when together, has a type of balance which allows them to, as Ra says, channel the creator, I believe Ra put it. But they have an ever-changing, the members of the council are ever-changing to account for different balances needed to make that connection. And supposedly they make decisions based upon what would be the most balance in light of the creator. So the council is who decides like things like the quarantine on Earth, whether or not somebody, a social memory complex within the Confederation, will be allowed to go through the quarantine on Earth to share the information or accomplish the mission that they put before the council. Or they also, I guess, determine the quarantine in the sense that they set up the guardians which patrol Earth that keeps negative influences from coming in too strongly, and in that way offers the balance. Anybody else have something interesting about the council they'd like to say?
I apologize, but I really have zero to offer this question. I'm not familiar with the other groups that JP names, and anything I could have said about the council, you and Carla have already said better than I would have.
I don't know about the names of these other groups, if they're associated with the council or just another way of looking at the council. You know, all of those are possibilities. I know through the years we were familiar with a fellow by the name of Mark Probert, who supposedly channeled from the council, but when I checked the different pieces of his work that I had been able to find, I couldn't see anything that I thought really sounded like it would come from the council. Dr. Henry Puharich was a good friend of Don's and Carlos for a number of years, and he supposedly was getting coded messages from the Nine, which is another, you know, the Nine members of the council. And they apparently gave him coded messages because he liked riddles. If he had been maybe a little more literal and open to information, he could have gotten in a simpler form. But so there is apparently some communication that has been made.
Another interesting tidbit is that they also sort of oversee the incarnative processes of those who are allowed to incarnate on Earth. So like wanderers are here because the council has allowed the wanderers to be here, and they kind of oversee the processes that go on the outer planes as well as the inner planes. But yeah, I think we've basically covered everything that Ra has said about the council. I don't think, as Gary and Carla said, there's not much we can say to confirm or deny that they are related to these other councils. It's possible. Seems like in channeling, terminology is not always exact, and so it's possible that in one channeled source, somebody might be called one thing, and in another it might be called another thing when they are actually the same thing. But it's, since there's no science behind it, it's just so hard to confirm anything like that. Does that answer your question, JP?
Yeah, more or less, but am I correct in assuming that they are just a mind complex, and am I correct in assuming every star system has their own council?
I think, I'm not sure what you mean by mind complex, but they are literal beings on a council that are using themselves to channel answers for the Confederation. And from what I understand, I'm not 100% sure on this, it's maybe not necessarily every single star system, but Ra said that the Confederation that they're a part of oversees a certain portion of our galaxy. And so I think that Saturn is sort of the council for the Confederation, which oversees a portion of the galaxy, and that there are other confederations that oversee their own part of the galaxy. That's sort of what Ra said. I might not be exactly right.
Yeah, that sounds right. I think it's just administrative, you know.
Okay.
I need to have these higher beings from higher realms have seen an administration, but I guess we all do. to decide questions before the groove and so forth.
Yeah, I think the major function is just ensuring balance and ensuring that free will is upheld. They're the ones who put in place the quarantine because they felt the free will of Earth had been abridged by the actions of Yahweh, who altered genetically and created basically an elite group, and that they felt that was such an infringement that other outside sources were going to have to be severely limited to help, balance that kind of infringement. And so I guess they just need to administrate the balance for the solar system, so entities are offered a balanced environment in which to polarize in.
Yahweh, by the way, was one of the guardians.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, tonight moved into the annals of Sumerian mythology with Enlil and Enki and all of that seems to be where they fit. It's all very fascinating.
It is. It's a very fun. I like to call it like a space opera. Very, very fun. Of course, it is all sort of transient to the heart of the message of the Law of One, but it's very interesting to know. It's historical, so it's neat to understand our origins and the influences from the outside. I think it is really fun. Anything else you'd like to ask, JP?
Well, I guess that kind of implies that there's some kind of light or energy being. If they're actually living in the rings, it's probably quite cold there to us. Or are they on some other frequency?
I think you're essentially right when you say frequency. They say, Ross says, that they exist in the octave or the eighth density through the rings of Saturn. So they are sort of transcending even the rest of the octave. They're kind of out of reach of all the densities, and they're able to, from that state, essentially channel the Creator. So, yeah, they're not necessarily, in the sense that we understand it, in third density space-time, physically in the rings, although I'm sure they are, but it's not the same as we would understand it at all. It's probably just something we wouldn't even recognize as reality.
Okay, well, it gives me great comfort knowing that we are so close to such exalted beings. Thanks, guys. I love you guys. Bye.
Thanks, JP.
We love you too, JP. Thank you so much for calling. Alrighty, we can move on to our questions sent in. Our first question comes from our friend Terry H. via email, and he is referencing a passage in the Law of One. Don was asking, can you tell me why the Earth will be fourth density positive instead of fourth density negative after the cycle is complete, since it seems that there is a greater negative population? And Ra answers, I am Ra. The Earth seems to be negative. That is due to the quiet, shall we say, horror, which is the common distortion which those good or positively oriented entities have towards the occurrences which are of your space-time present. However, those oriented and harvestable in the ways of service to others greatly outnumber those whose orientation towards service to self has become that of harvestable quality. So Terry would like to ask, what's your comment on Ra's observation regarding those good entities on Earth? Is it because good entities are often peace-loving beings, thus they dislike any possible violent action or protest? I am somewhat puzzled at the exact definition of quiet horror here. How do you define it?
I would respond.
Oh, you're asking him. Excuse me.
No, that was something that Terry had asked.
Oh, okay. If you take a look at what's happening right now, today, in that part of the world where Izul is naturally, or just as a way of things, killing people, slaughtering them. What reaction can I have but quiet horror? And something like that is always going on. You know, the faces of the players change, but the actions seem to remain remarkably the same. Slaughter and suffering. And it's all in the line of political, getting their political way. Very effective, I suppose. That's why it keeps working. So that's what, I mean, I don't have to really define the quiet horror, except by asking Terry how he feels about it. Can't imagine he'd feel any way other than that. He's horrified. Absolutely horrified.
Just for fun, I looked up horror in the dictionary to see if there were any interesting definitions, because Ra sometimes used antiquated definitions of certain words. And on top of the definition of being a sort of scary, shocking, or uncomfortable feeling about something, that could also mean an aversion to something. And I think if you replace the word horror in that context to aversion, it still works. In that positive entities have a type of aversion towards the things that happen, the suffering that happens, and that seems to be inflicted upon people by other people, by seemingly negative entities. I think that Terry is basically right when he says that positive entities are often peace-loving and dislike violent action. There's a sense of compassion and empathy which comes with being a positive being, and so somebody with an open heart polarizing positively may see suffering from what appear to be negative events and feel as though that suffering is their own suffering, and feel as though that somebody suffering should not be suffering, doesn't deserve to be suffering, because their suffering is no different from a seeker's own suffering. Whereas somebody who's not necessarily polarizing positively might not feel the same way. When somebody hasn't opened the heart center, when they haven't expanded their compassion universally, they might care about the suffering of their family or their tribe or themselves, and not necessarily look at entities suffering on the other side of the world and feel the same way that a positively oriented being might. So I think that has something to do with it, as well as just the empathy that positively oriented beings feel is seeing suffering. They feel as though it is the suffering of themselves and of the Creator. To go just a little bit deeper into Ra's words, I think there's an interesting dynamic at play, in the sense that when one acts against another or causes suffering, it's not necessarily indicative of the negative path, which is, I think that's a key part of understanding what Don was asking here. It may be negative by the definition of someone who's polarizing positively, but for an action to be polarizing towards the negative, it's got to be more than just violent, more than just harmful. It's got to be consciously directed in a way which gains power for the one who is doing that action. And I think there are a lot of people on this planet who might harm unconsciously, or they might harm or hurt other people without a real attempt at polarizing. But the difference between a harmful action which is polarizing and a harmful action which isn't polarizing doesn't look different to a positive entity. It looks the same. There's an entity who is being harmed or suffering, and that is the suffering of the self, essentially, the suffering of the Creator. And so even though we see so many negative things going on, like Ross said, a lot of the negativity that seems to be service to self isn't that of what they call harvestable quality. So they might just be sort of indifferent or sort of skewing towards the service to self, but essentially the harm can be misguided. It's not necessarily a service to self harvestable action. And so I think that's why we won't be a negative planet, is because there are more beings who are open-hearted and feel that suffering than ones who actually impose that suffering on others and are harvestable because of it. Gary or Jim, you guys have anything to add for Terry?
No, I think you guys have covered it really well.
How about you, Gary? Gary, I don't know if you can hear me, but I think your microphone might be muted.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was talking, and apparently it was. You and Carla covered a good half of my own response and then some very well. I would focus on something that hasn't been addressed in Terry's question and Ra's statement, and that's that they use the word quiet before horror. And I can't say for sure why Ra chose that particular adjective, but my best guess is that it was chosen to convey the internal experience that many positively oriented souls have in response to the conditions in this illusion that remain generally unvocalized in the collective experience, seems somewhat private and internal feeling. And that sense of horror, like Carla said, it's always been happening here, it seems, just the faces change. And a review of history will quickly reinforce that conclusion. But I think that horror is probably fed all the more by our media, which, at least in this country, tends to focus, emphasize, and even exaggerate the more negative or tragic or fear-inducing aspects of life within our global society. And while I was thinking about it, I found a Ra quote where they mention that at the present space-time, the condition of well-meant and unintentional slavery are so numerous that it beggars our ability to enumerate them. And that's just one of the many things in response to which the positively oriented entity may feel horror, that there's a pervasive, permeating myriad ways that people are enslaved, even in an unintentional and well-meant way. And that category does not necessarily include the slaughter and the suffering and the confusion and then just the general state of misery that so many entities experience. And I think it ties into what Austin was saying, that sense of empathy, that sense of beyond the personal boundaries or the tribal boundaries so that it includes everyone, will be, as Ra said, of the higher densities, that a pain felt in the body is a pain felt for the self, and I'm paraphrasing that. But that's my general idea, Terry, about your good question.
All right. Anything else to add for Terry here?
Jim?
No, you guys did a really good job.
Thank you, Terry. That was a good question. Our next question comes from user Dad of Four Kids via Bringforth. He's got a few quick questions here. First, he asks, any idea yet if there will be any more transcripts past 2011? I figured we could just give people a little update on this.
Well, we would love to do that, but it's going to take the improvement of Carla's back and getting off pain medication for this to happen. That's been a lengthy process so far, so we really have no idea when this might occur, but that's what is necessary because the pain medication puts her in a state of mind where she would not be able to do the channeling with the confidence that it was done as well as it needs to be done and well she's done it in the past. It takes the focus away that's necessary. So it's in our future dreams and hopes, and as soon as it's anywhere close, we will certainly let people know.
And just to take this opportunity to remind people that we just have a ton of transcripts in the library. So even if there aren't any new transcripts being generated, I'm sure there's plenty that has not been read or touched on. And we are working on a new organizational system for our new website that will help people keep track of what they may have read and maybe help categorize some of the different channelings. And so it might open up new ways to read the channeling. So there will be some developments in the future beyond just hoping that we will continue channeling. His next question is, has anyone thought of video recording some sessions? When I think about this question, I thought about there's something about you guys not wanting to use digital mediums for recording, right?
We've done that before.
Oh, you have?
Mm-hmm.
No, my basic feeling is that I don't want to come to the channeling with anything less than my complete and best self. And as long as I'm taking pain medication, I feel that I am in an altered state. I really can't hold a concentrated center for a very long period of time before I just start drifting off to sleep. And that doesn't work, you know, for channeling. You can't accept that. It's not acceptable. So I'm waiting until I get into more acceptable parameters for my own self before I do something as important as channel.
And if that day should come in the future, would you have anything against being filmed digitally or recorded in that fashion?
No. No, I don't have any problems with that. I just have a problem with my own focus not being there. I'd be glad to do it digitally, whatever that means exactly.
All right. And his last question is, any idea what the Confederation brothers and sisters are doing lately? I'd imagine they are still hard at work trying to send us as much love and light as possible while we're going through the transition period. Anybody have any personal insights on what the Confederation is doing?
They said...
Go ahead.
Okay, hey, Kyle.
No, I was just going to say that I didn't. I didn't have any insights.
We just reflect on, you know, what I had read of the material, and that what unites the Confederation is their desire to be of service, and one of their primary areas of service is third density. And if there's any third density planet that needs service, it's definitely this one. So, like Austin said, I'm sure they're quite busy with.
But they do understand that I would have problems with my own integrity if I came back before I was ready. And I do not want to do that. I want to honor the job to its fullest capacity. I hope to be back soon. I just don't know when. I'm sorry.
So are they giving you workman's comp while you're off?
Darn, you know, I should probably put in for that.
And the Confederation does more than just offer themselves as channels to people who channel vocally. They can help people through dreams. They can give subtle impressions. If you open yourself to guidance without opening yourself to channeling specifically, they can still offer. Hakuo has said a few times, I've read, that if you ask for help to deepen your state of meditation, they can help you do that. And there's lots of different ways that they can help on Earth without having to go through a channel. So I'm sure they are still plenty busy doing whatever they can to help get us through these times.
Indeed.
And another thing I forgot to mention about new developments for the transcripts is that we are also in the midst of converting the old transcript recordings to MP3 for you to download on the website. And we have the first 10 up in our online store right now, but we will try to get as many as possible. It's going to be a very long process since there's so many of them, but that's another feature that we'll have on our new website, is the ability to download the audio from the channeling transcripts. And I think it creates a difference when you actually listen to the audio as well as read the transcript. It's very immersive when you do that. So that's another thing to look forward to. All right. Our next question comes from Storm Shadow via Bring Forth. He says, here's something interesting. A channeled message from aliens, doesn't say which, offering to come make themselves known now that the quarantine is over. It says that all we have to do is answer with a yes or no in our heads, and they'll tally the vote. I think I can guess which way most of us here will vote. What do you think of this? Does it sound legit?
No. I would have to say probably not. They're not in the habit, at least the positively oriented entities are not in the habit of being open about themselves, and I believe they would need a consensus for any type of a landing. They prefer to operate behind the scenes and preserve people's free will. You know, when they work that way, then they find that the population of the planet, when it does learn something, has got it embedded in their beingness and not just something that can be forgotten because somebody did it for you.
I think I would generally agree. I'm not sure if there's anything in the raw material specifically that talks about a time when the quarantine will come to an end. I think in the community, in the New Age community, channeling community, there was a big sentiment that 2012 marked the end of the quarantine. But I don't necessarily think that's true. It could be. Obviously, we don't know. But I do think a lot of people are really hoping to see some aliens and UFOs and really hoping to see some open contact in our lifetime that might influence that information a little bit. And also, not sure about this tallying votes for yes or no to come forward. Like Jim was saying, that's Ra has said, that's not generally how the Confederation hopes for people to awaken. And I think that a large part of the population probably isn't ready for something like that yet. I don't think there are a whole lot of people outside of the New Age community that would really be able to integrate the experience of UFOs landing openly, successfully. I think it would probably cause issues, cause some distortions. But again, that's speculation. I don't really know. How about you, Carla? How do you feel about that idea?
You'll have to get back with her on that.
No, I am.
Okay, how about you, Gary?
No, nothing to add. You guys are good. Thanks.
You did a good job on that.
Okay. I think we've got some time to address this last one. Michael from a podcast called Don Treader Review was looking for a discussion about the seven densities in our shows and couldn't find a good discussion with descriptions for all of them, so I was thinking maybe we could take some time to go through the basics of the seven densities as we understand them for Michael. And I guess starting with first density, if anybody wants to describe what that might be.
I'll be glad to plunge in. First density is, okay. Well, go ahead. Who wants to do it?
Go for it, Carla.
Is it going to be you?
No. I think you can
get
that one.
First density is energies and things, rock, material, the various things that make up our chart of minerals and items like that. But then also the four spirits, the four directions, that kind of energetic basic that has no life within itself, but is easily impregnated with life. Second density is that first life, that first recognizable spark of life with the animals and then the plants. So our density is us. The first level that takes in a spiritual component. And above third density, there is the density of love, the fourth density, the density of wisdom or understanding, which is fifth density, the density of unity, which is sixth density, And then seventh density is sometimes called the density of foreverness. When you get to the eighth density, it's an octave density. It's like in music, bum, 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 that's an octave. It's the same tone, but it's eight notes higher. And we've been doing this, going from density to density, and then from octave to octave for an interminable time. I don't know how long. But the end of one density is also the beginning of the next. So there's a point within first density that is timeless and a point within seventh density, which is timeless as it goes into that experience of moving from creation to creation. It's an unending process. Go ahead, anyone that wants to elaborate on that or correct me.
I would add that in fourth density is the beginning of the formation of social memory complexes, though Ra indicates that there's some possibility in advanced third density to do so. It's really in fourth density where that takes shape.
The interesting part about that is fourth density, you have to evolve as a social memory complex. You can't do it outside of a social memory complex, and so that creates some difficulty for the service to self social memory complexes, because they have a hard time acting as a group. You can probably imagine that acting as a cohesive group when everybody is attempting to gain as much power within the group as possible can probably not be the most efficient way to achieve something, whereas I think service to others can probably function very well because you're accepting of everybody's differences and abiding, and you don't really see the need for a hierarchy of power. And so everybody can put their will towards something without the distraction of the power plays and the bids for power.
Yes.
And one interesting thought I had about going back to first density, and that's basically, as Carla was saying, the basic elements, but also I think the four elements of wind, fire, water, and earth. And Ra seems to indicate that some planets aren't necessarily of first density because they're not evolving through first density. They're kind of just stuck there. And I think what would require a planet to evolve through first density is the ability for all of these elements to interact with each other, where you have earth and water being able to interact with fire and wind. And that can create the things necessary for second density to come about on the planet's surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one very important thing that Ross said, was that, and it's in the Bible also, that, you know, the energy moving over the face of the water and the first land being seen. Because of that, it is sorting out the kinds of environment. Just having one environment that was the same everywhere, in that it was sort of globulous, you know. It wasn't earth, it wasn't wind, it wasn't fire. You know, you didn't see these things coming forth until one moved upon the other and began to create life.
In that sense, they were kind of interacting with themselves as other selves, as the illusion of separation. They couldn't be the same thing. They had to be different in order to create the environment needed
for
further
life. In order to allow
life.
Them light to appear. Yeah.
Right, yeah, so the illusion was necessary, the illusion of separation. And it's, when you use it in that sense, illusion is very maybe not the best term because it's very literal. The earth and the water and the fire and the wind,
yes,
they aren't the same thing. They have to be distinctly different to create these different dynamics and the different play with each other to help create an environment for life.
The length of the
Last said.
I'm sorry. Is that you, Gary?
Yeah, go ahead.
The length of the densities are measured in millions and billions of years, except for third density. And that seems to be a case where from the first density through the second density, there's a individuation of consciousness going on. So that by the time we get to third density, we have a mind, a body, and a spirit. And then we decide what to do with our energies, to go either positively oriented or negatively, to be radiant or to be magnetic, and continue on in a towards reunification. And this again is measured in millions of years. So the third density is very short in comparison with 75,000 years for the normal third density passage, and in order to make this choice. And that seems to be the real reason we're kind of a, as Ross said, that choice is the axis upon which the rest of the creation turns. So that was all. Gary?
Ross said also of this density that it was 100 times more catalytic than the next, meaning a lot more intense. And they said, quote, there is very little work in consciousness in fourth and fifth densities compared to the work done in third density, end quote.
I've heard, I think it was Kuo that described third density as the Athanor in which the spirit is formed, which would be basically like a furnace of intense heat, which basically forms the basic outline of whatever you're forming. So it is the most intense process of forming something, which would, I guess, would be our evolving spirit. And then after third density, it's not as intense. There's not as much heat, and we basically perfect that simple form that was formed within third density under the intense pressure and the intense heat. So
Ross said something about the statue. I'm not sure if statue was the term that they used. The sculpture, something being forged in third density, and then the work of subsequent densities being the refining of that statue or sculpture.
I actually have that right here. The intensity of fourth density is that of the refining of the rough-hewn sculpture. That is, indeed, in its own way, quite intense, causing the mind-body-spirit complex to move ever inward and onward in its quest for fuller expression. However, in third density, the statue is forged in the fire. This is a type of intensity which is not a property of fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh densities. So while we might have the shorter density in terms of time, we do have the most intense.
I don't think anyone would do that.
Another thought, I collected a bunch of raw quotes about densities just to comment on them as they came up. And one that struck me because it illustrates the negative path taken to its extreme, taken to its fullest potential prior to the negative releasing its polarity in the unity of sixth density. And Ra says, of the fifth density negative service to self entity, that it has, quote, become extremely intense and the self has shrunk or compacted so that the dialogues, they say there are very, very few fifth density negative wanderers, for they fear the forgetting. And, okay, this is the point I wanted to get to. There are very, very few fifth density Orion members, for they do not any longer perceive any virtue in other selves. They become so turned within, so compacted, so separated from everything that they don't even want to have, it seems, power over others in a negative group setting or to even interact with any sort of group or lower densities because there is no virtue in other selves. They shut out, it seems, everything completely. That's just an amazing thing to consider.
They, I guess, don't even see other selves as tools or pawns to be manipulated for power. They just rely completely on the self for whatever power they need.
That's kind of a surprise. I would think they would want to have somebody to dominate.
Yeah, that is interesting. But Rod
well,
did say
this is wisdom density here. They're not going for political power. They're not going for collecting influence. They're simply trying to answer the question why. So it gets turned within and then turned within again.
It's a difficult experience to even imagine or contemplate.
It is.
Ra gives a pointer as to what's happening in fifth density in terms of moving towards harvestability, and they say, in fifth density harvest, polarization has very little to do with harvestability. In fifth density positive and negative, the concept of work done through a potential difference is not particularly helpful, as fifth density entities are, again, intensifying rather than potentiating. What intensifying means precisely, I can't say, but it gives one direction to contemplate.
Are we going underwater here?
What is it, going underwater mean?
It had a peculiar sound to it. Anyway, as the sun sinks in the west, we send you every bit of love that we have.
Yeah, as we descend into the waters.
I don't know what that sound was. We'll have to find out when we get off mic.
I think we pretty much covered the densities pretty well there, sort of plucking at everything we could.
I think so.
So, any last words, Carla?
Just we love you all so very much. Please send in your questions. If you have any at all, and if you'd like to have us chew things over and be part of your thread for a little while, come and talk to us. We'd so appreciate it.
Please do. We really appreciate any questions, even if maybe it's something that you don't really need an answer to but think would be interesting to discuss. We would love to hear it, love to discuss it. We really need some questions to discuss. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Talk with you then.